The annual Sled Island Music and Arts Festival is back June 17th to 21st. Presented by Service Credit Union, experience 5 days of music, comedy, art, and much more in diverse venues across Calgary, Alberta. Joining Sled Island's previously announced guest curator, Clipping, is English chamber folk ensemble Black Country New Road, revered Canadian pop project Homeshake, renowned abstract rapper Billy Woods, LA synth-punk Sextile, fuzzy indie rock outfit Feeble Little Horse, outlandish egg-punk group Snooper, lo-fi post-punk duo Sweeping Promises, New York-based ambient pioneer Laraji, genre-bending dream pop artist Salami Rose Joe Lewis, and many more. Plus, there's over 150 more artists still to be announced. Check out the current lineup and get your passes and tickets at sledisland.com.
This is
Sit Down Tracy.
And you are listening to
101.5 UMFM.
Hall of the Days.
Warning, the following may contain naughty words or ideas. If that makes you nervous, check back with us later.
Or don't. Try something new. Feel a little bit dangerous, perhaps, on this dreary, dreary Victoria Day. You're listening to a brand new, brand spanking new live episode of Post Everything on 101.5 UMFM. As always, or as it used to always be, Victoria Day once again is a horribly, horribly miserable day of a holiday weather-wise. I remember the running joke was always, always that it has to rain on Victoria Day, right when we get our first big long weekend of the year, right as summer is supposed to kick off. And right now, it definitely does not feel summery if you haven't been outside in a little bit. Who knows, maybe you're lying around in your underwear watching TV, just chilling out, just chillaxing. Hopefully you are, and not putting too much pressure on yourself. I know I was doing quite a bit of chillaxing earlier. I didn't even know the weather. I didn't know what time it was. I was just sitting around watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer, thinking about all the dishes that I had to do. But that's more tomorrow's problem. Today is a day to relax, and perhaps the weather is telling us go inside and relax. We got a very non-relaxing set of music coming up, but if you're like me and you enjoy the tension and release and a bit of the abrasiveness and agitation that comes with certain types of experimental music and loud music and heavy and not so heavy music, then you're in the right place. Maybe it'll relax you, maybe it won't. Who knows? No matter what, we got a great show coming up. Lots of lawn songs this time, or songs crafted together to feel lawn. Usually I try to space it out a little bit, short songs, lawn songs, but lots of lawn songs this time, which can be nice. Do a little bit of a detox for our brain rotted, screened up brains. Extend our attention spans a little bit, not fidget so much, unless you gotta. Anyways, normally I kick things off with a really heavy song, or a couple of heavy songs. This time we only have one. It's 3 minutes in length, which is relatively short compared to the rest of these songs. It's a band I discovered from KEXP called Blackwater Holy Light, sort of in the doomgaze genre. It's what it sounds like, doom metal plus shoegaze. It's dreamy, it's heavy, it's fuzzy, and it's super duper melodic, super pretty. On top of these just crushingly, grindingly heavy riffs, it's a song called Spades. This is Post Everything on 101.5 UMFM.
We'll be right back.
just always a match made in heaven. Those airy, super light vocals, super duper melodic, super pretty on top of these giant, cosmically huge riffs. To boot in this song, I love the pummeling drums driving everything forward. In case you missed it, that was a track called Spades from a band called Blackwater Holy Light from their album Not Here, Not Gone, which came out a month or two ago, but I found them through their KEXP live session. Go check that out if you're so inclined. If, like I said beforehand, you're chillaxing, you're looking for something to watch, KEXP is always a sure bet. You got not only the informative talk interview segments, but some of the best music you can find from all around the world. Right now, you're listening to Post Everything on 101.5 UMFM, and that's about as conventionally heavy as we're going to get this episode. I said conventionally. I would say most of the songs I play are heavy, but all in very, very different ways. This next song, I would say, is super heavy, but definitely not in the conventional way. There's no huge riffs. There's no crushing moments of noise. No big drums. Nothing quite like that. But there's kind of a creeping death to it, a creeping terror. It's from an album I've been trying to get into for about the past 10 years or so because people used to joke around about it for so long on the internet, especially in like Facebook meme groups I was part of all places. Of course, the band is Swans from their album To Be Kind. Everywhere I looked when I was around 16 to 18 years old, people were making jokes about this album, about its cover, about the band themselves, and people were kind of divided on it. I didn't really know what to expect from it, so I didn't even touch it. I didn't even want to listen to it because, A, why are people joking around about it? Why are people so divided on it? It has to be not that great. B, half the songs are like 15 to 30 minutes long. Yes, I said 30. There's a track on it that's 34 minutes long. I'm not brave enough to get to that yet. I haven't even heard the whole thing yet. So I was afraid to touch it for a long time, afraid of the divisiveness, the chaos, the goofiness of how the band members looked and the album art. I didn't know what to expect. So I listened to it recently. Long story short, or at least most of it, but it was really hard to get past the first song because it's so incredibly good. And that's what I'm going to play for you today. The first track from the first disc of Swans is To Be Kind. It's a song called Screenshot, and it's hypnotic. It's a little bit sensual. It's a little bit threatening. It just builds and builds into this huge, huge crescendo, which is kind of what Swans are known for. All that, and it has some of the best drumming and one of the catchiest bass riffs looping throughout it that I've ever heard. It's got a bit of everything going on, a little bit of tension, not so much release, and like I said, it's heavy in a way that I enjoy that's not so conventionally heavy. So you've been listening to Post Everything so far on 101.5 UMFM. This is Screenshot by Swans.
suffering, no thought, no hurt, no hands to reach, no knife, no words, no light, no cure, no need, no hate, no will, no speech.
From Near Whisper to Absolute Cacophony, that was track one, disc one of Swans' To Be Kind, track called Screenshot, an album a record, if you will, I've found so incredibly hard to get into if you missed this story, partially because people joked so much about Swans and their appearance and their career and how Michael Gira, singer, songwriter, and band leader, is a bit of an oddball in both appearance and his personal life and his music, but partially the album itself is a little bit daunting. It's two discs of 10 songs, which isn't so bad. However, the songs are averaging about 10 to 15 minutes long, but people say the best song on it, Toussaint L'Ouverture / Brain the Sun, is 34 minutes long, which is in itself very, very daunting. But part of it is also that this song, Screenshot, which once again kicks off the album, is so incredibly good and so powerful that it's hard to move on from it, partially because the song after it, I think, is not great. I don't love it. It's a bit goofy in a way that works against itself, and a bit unsettling with how strange it is, I guess. There's something I don't appreciate about it. It's a song called Just a Little Boy for Chester Burnett, and yeah, it just rubs me the wrong way. So it's hard to move on from that and get into the rest of the album, even though the rest of the songs, from what I've heard, are so great themselves, like Oxygen and the previously mentioned Brain the Sun / Toussaint L'Ouverture. But I might have to give it another chance. Listen to the whole thing. Just buckle down for 2 hours and listen. You're listening to Post Everything on 101.5 UMFM. Listening to a lot of lawn songs today, a lot of kind of droning, repetitive, motoric kind of tracks. And that was one of them, of course. I like how the best of Swans' tracks, the best Swan songs, if you will, from the past 20 or so years that Swans has been reunited, have felt almost ritualistic. They feel like primal chants, and that's something that they share with another band I've been diving into called Boredoms from Japan. I played a track from them last week from their album Chocolate Synthesizer, a track called Shock City, which highlighted more of early Boredoms, kind of noisy, over-the-top, super overdriven, like everything in the kitchen sink sort of approach, all styles, all instruments going all at once, just absolute cacophony, once again absolute chaos. However, as Boredoms went on, they became more indebted to post-rock and krautrock, almost jazz-like at times, and spacey and psychedelic, highlighting more of the sort of motorized rhythmic aspect of krautrock, the repetitive musical motifs and rhythms, and a more pared down sound, I would say, although it still sounds so huge and, like I said, very spaced out. It feels like a cosmic journey. It's a huge contrast to Chocolate Synthesizer and the earlier records that I've heard from Boredoms as I've been diving into them. And I don't have a preference. I like all Boredoms, but this kind of gets me going in a different way. So this is a track that drew me in particular. It's the third song from their 1998 record. I don't know how to say the name. It's super AE, but it's like the Scandinavian AE, where it's one letter. So it's AE. I don't know. I'm going to say Super E. Third track from that called Super Going, 12 minutes long. Trying to save your attention spans here from the brain rot and the reels that I know you've been consuming nonstop. So let's dive in. This has been Post Everything. You're listening to, about to listen to Super Going by Boredoms. That was Super Going by Boredoms from their record, hope I'm saying this right, Super E? Super A-E? Once again, it's that Scandinavian letter that looks like an A and an E fused together, which I think is supposed to be an E, but I'm not sure what's supposed to convey, so I'll just say Super E. You're listening right now to Post Everything on 101.5 UMFM. A lot of the longer, more post-rocky kind of experimental tracks I play, sort of like the swan song I played before this one, are like exercises in tension, I believe, in building tension, creating tension, releasing tension, and chaos. But I think a track like this is more about restraint, not actively creating restraint, but bucking against restraint. It's a very narrow sonic palette for the most part. It's a bass, guitar, drums, and slight vocals and synthesizer work throughout the track. And it's mostly two chords ramping up over the same beat for the a majority of 10 and a half minutes going into 12. But using those minimal elements, they create a lot of noise, and I think maybe that's the point. I think maybe it's trying to create the most amount of noise possible, go somewhere, go on a journey with the least amount of elements. Either way, it sounds super, super cool, kind of psychedelic, spacey kind of journey. And the repetitiveness, it feels like some sort of strange sci-fi kind of soundtrack. Even if we don't think too philosophically about what the song means, what the intent is, it still sounds great. So, you know, it's two ways of going about art, I'm sure. There's a joke online a lot about, like, the guy who's seen 500 movies versus the guy who's seen 5,000. The guy who's seen 500 says, like, his favorite films are obscure, like, French art house cinema. But the guy who's seen 5,000 really, really likes Fast and Furious movies. Sometimes it's like that. Sometimes you just learn to enjoy things in a simple way rather than agonizing what they mean and what they look like. But also, this track is super, super chill, good for just kind of walking around and listening to. Most of the album Super AE is in the same way if you go check it out, but it has more of the sort of Boredoms elements, I'll call them, more big, noisy riffs, more chanting elements, things like that, more of the kitchen sink production. Super chill, like these next couple of tracks from the new Broken Social Scene, which I didn't really want to touch again on this show, because I feel like Broken Social Scene is kind of maybe a bit overplayed on our college circuits. Among our fans, maybe even. But the album is quite good. I wasn't a huge fan of their previous full-length, Hug of Thunder. It sounded a bit too self-conscious, like they were reaching towards their past work for inspiration a little bit too much, trying to reclaim the sound and feeling of their absolute masterpiece, You Forgot It, In People. But this one felt more like its own beast, like it was more, has more of the collective feel, which I liked about the first few Broken Social Scene records, more of the, once again, I'm going to use this phrase, the kitchen sink sound, a bit of everything all at once. It still sounds a little too much like Kevin Drew and his backing band will say, whereas the first few Broken Social Scenes records, what I liked about them was that it was like very much a collective feel. You don't know who's in the band. You don't know who's playing what. You don't know what's really going on. It sounded really soupy, very, very dense. Things floating in and out of your ears, different elements going on, especially their self-titled record. Something I love about it, super duper abstract, often three singers at once, tons and tons of different songs chopped up into one. And so that record's missing a bit of that chaos, except for these two songs, which remind me of the couplet of, what's it called? 90s, I think it's late 90s rock for the Bedroom Missionaries, going into Shampoo Suicide from You Forgot It, In People. Sort of a perfect coupling of songs that almost feel like they're supposed to be one song, but they're like two different songs with very different feels stitched together, but they share elements. It has a bit of that going on either way. It's one big, long song. It's a pair of tracks called This Briefest Kiss and Life Within the Ground, which I feel they were trying to be sneaky about. They share bass lines. They share chords. I think they share themes even if you dive into it, but they do feel like they're meant to be one big track, so that's how I'm presenting them. Broken Social Scene, This Briefest Kiss, Bleeding Into Life Within the Ground. This is Post Everything on 101.5 UMFM.
Da, 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 da. be sold or upgraded. I was coming out faded. When you look at me jaded.
That was an absolutely beautiful couplet of tunes from Broken Social Scene's new record, Remember the Humans. That last one was called Life Within the Ground, but connecting to it beforehand was a track called This Briefest Kiss, sung by Leslie Feist, I believe. It's hard to tell who's singing what on a Broken Social Scene song, but I think that was unmistakably Feist. You're listening right now to Post Everything on 101.5 UMFM. Like I said, the new Broken Social Scene was not my absolute favorite, but I appreciated that they did this little trick. They made two very slightly different songs with the same bass line, the same chords, the same tempo, the same drums. It all feels like one, but I think no matter what I said before the songs were playing, I think that they were like thematically very, very different. They're very, very different songs in terms of what they're about, how they're sung. So I'd say they're less like twins and more like cousins, maybe, distantly related, riding the same branch of the family tree, but different otherwise, if you're catching my drift here. But go check out the record either way. It's a very worthy kind of addition to their canon. So far, nothing's going to beat those first few albums, which is something I have to live with, something that all fans have to live with every single band. They're not going to make another You Forgot It in People. They're not going to make another self-titled. This is pretty good for what we're getting this late in their career. And although I wasn't in love with Hug of Thunder, the two EPs that came after it were probably some of my favorite collections of tracks that they've ever made. It goes toe-to-toe with those albums I just mentioned. So my time is almost up. I'm here 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. every Monday. So don't touch that dial. You're going to see me next week. I'm here every time. No matter how I'm feeling, no matter how I'm doing. Today was chaotic. Today, my brain was full of bees. Another weird metaphor, I'm sure. Today was full of tension. So, of course, lots of tense music. But I feel like our lives are sometimes full of just manufactured tension all the time. Sometimes we put ourselves through it. Sometimes others put us through it. No matter what, whether it's like our commutes, our works, the relationships we have with the community around us, with our families, our presence online, our time online, the amount of time we spend online, I think our lives are just full of grinding and tension and small terrors sometimes, which is very unfortunate. I don't think we're supposed to live like that all the time. And I don't think we realize that we live like that so much. Our shoulders get tight. Our jaws are clenched all the time. Our head are just swimming full through like darkness and horrible, horrible thoughts, and we don't even realize, but it creeps up on us. And I think this next track helped me move past that on certain days. It's not gone all the time. There's no fix for this. This has to be an ongoing process of care, I think, and looking into oneself and reflection, not both about yourself and about the people around you and the places that you're in, your environments. What's making you tense? Why do I feel tense? How can I escape this? This song helped me a lot. It doesn't replace therapy, but it does feel like it. It's a very, very hushed song for the most part. It has a build feel to it, but for most of it, it's just this ambient kind of piece of beautiful, almost alt country. I want to call it an ambient folk song, ambient Americana, if that makes sense. But it's slow. It walks with you. It holds your hand. It talks about new self, about reflecting on yourself, about becoming something totally new until it just explodes at the end. You sound like you're in the room with the band. It's so comforting. So therapeutic. It might help you with some things. It might not, but it does feel like release. So until next time, my name is Corbin Friesen. This has been Post Everything on 101.5 UMFM. Catch me next week, however you are and however I am. This is a band called A Horse Named Friday from Kitchener, Ontario, with a track called Mad Scientist. Go check out their record, The Marriage of Loneliness and Continental Bliss, and I'll see you next week. Find a new way.
to exist again. I'll find a new way to exist the same.
Through Tree Canada's National Greening Program, native tree seedlings are planted across Canada, creating a widespread impact. Planted trees provide habitat, prevent soil erosion, and reforest areas that have suffered tree loss due to pests and weather. Tree Canada performs 1, 2, and 5-year assessments to monitor tree survival and ensure the trees planted are on track to meet the forest cover goals of the site. To learn more or to get involved, go to treecanada.ca.
Tanariwen are true originals with a sound that defies time or place. Their music may come out of the Sahara, but what they've built is bigger than geography. A mix of slow-burning desert blues and psychedelia built on repetition, space, and guitar lines that feel like they're always moving forward, even when nothing is rushed. It's hypnotic and mesmerizing with a kind of stillness and peace that washes over you. Touareg guitar masters Tanariwen perform at the Park Theatre for one night only on September 10th at 7 p.m. Great tickets are available now for only $45 plus fees, available via ticketweb.ca. Don't miss Tanariwen live at Park Theatre on September 10th, brought to you by your friends at Moto Live and proudly supported by UMFM 101.5.
On May 15th, the band Crooked Ice releases their debut album Dark Stars on all streaming services. It features 11 tracks of heavy rock you weren't ready for and includes the track in the background, 1072. She was looking at that ticket for free. Mark June 4th down in your calendar and come see the band play the album front to back at the Osborne Tap House, joined by opening bands Color by Numbers and Flush. The weather will be warm, the past is full of dark stars, and soon, the future will be crooked. A
one-way ticket for loving me. There's no feeling like a prairie wind rolling warm and strong, and there's no festival like Prairie Wind Music Fest bringing it all to life and song. From June 5th to 7th in Cypress River, the festival celebrates its 13th year with an incredible lineup of Manitoba talent, including the return of festival favorites The Reverend Rambler and Cheering for the Bad Guy, plus many more. 3 days of music, community, and wide open prairie skies. Festival passes are available now with early bird pricing available for a limited time. So grab your tickets early and save before prices go up. Head to prairiewindmusicfest.com for tickets and details. Mark your calendar and your map for Cypress River and Prairie Wind Music Fest June 5th to 7th, proudly supported by 101.5 UMFM.
Hi, I'm Keith from Hot Panda.
And I'm Chris from Hot Panda.
And I'm Heath from Hot Panda.
And we're in the band Hot Panda. And when we're in Winnipeg, we listen to CJUM.
Hot Panda.
It just makes sense.
Here's Lemieux. The center penalty coming up. Look at Lemieux.
A mistake and a throw of puck by Bridget. A taser from Jonathan Taves is first.
Lemieux ahead to Gretzky. That's Murphy with a 2-1 by Lemieux. And a goal. He shoots. He scores.
Again, let's fight it. Sidney Crosby, the golden goal.
Gretzky picked it up, couldn't find it. Eiserman is turning. He's coming in. Another shot. Score. Eiserman. Score.
hockey fans. How you doing today? It's Talkin' Hockey, the Hockey Talkin' Show, coming at you not live from the UMFM 101.5 FM. That's right, folks. It's a holiday Monday. Co-host Tom here with you. I got co-host Jared. We're recording on Sunday. Yep, a little bit of that trickery. But that's just the way she goes, folks. And sometimes she goes and sometimes she don't. And on this holiday Monday, she don't, which is why we're going on Sunday. But we've got a great show for you. We're going to talk the 1992 Pittsburgh Penguins. That was their back-to-back Stanley Cup win with Mario and company. We have got lots of playoff talk coming up on the show because we're in the swing of things there. And we will, what else are we going to talk about here? I don't know. We got a stat line of the week. Ooh, we're going to put on Matt Sundin's pants. Just sort of slip into those, see how they feel, see what kind of decisions they make us do, choose. Yeah, we got a good show, folks. It is Monday, May 18th. And this is Talkin' Hockey, the Hockey Talkin' Show. You can catch us every single Monday on UMFM 101.5 right here in lovely Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. If you're not in Winnipeg, well, you can click the Listen Live button on the UMFM website and stream us from stream to station anywhere you might happen to be. And you can also grab the podcast for the show after it airs. And a little fun note about that, if you are a podcast listener rather than a live radio listener, you may have noticed a little change in the musical portions of the show. We'll be like, oh, and that was, you know, whatever band. And then it's obviously not that band. It's organ music that sounds like it's from, you know, a rink in the 80s. And that is intentional, folks, because our good friends over at Spotify were removing our episodes due to copyright infringement. But hey, there's no copyright infringement when you're listening live on terrestrial radio here on UMFM. So I encourage you to tune in that way. And if you are listening via podcast, you know, you can always just pretend to hear the song or like take what we're suggesting, go to your music platform of choice and hit the song play on that. Regardless, that's what we're doing and it's pretty fun. So there you have it. Co-host Jared, how you doing today?
Tom, you're about 3 minutes in on your intro and yeah. I'm glad to join you here.
Thank you.
I would also encourage you, if you want to hear some of that music that we're playing, go down to a record store. Flip yeah. through some dusty stacks of wax or CDs. And
wax stacks.
Yeah, stacks of wax. And buy yourself some physical
Jared, movies. What are some good record stores in our community?
Well, Tom, I'm glad you asked because there's a plethora of them. A whole whack of places to get stacks of wax. I would say you could go to Into the Music in the Exchange District.
Classic, yeah.
It is classic. You could go visit my friend DJ Kinetic at Old Gold Vintage Vinyl, which is in Osborne Village.
Yeah, great shop.
You could go see my friend Dave at Planet of Sound, which is out on Henderson Highway. You could go to Argy's in St. Vitale, South St. Vitale.
Yeah.
You
it's on
go,
what, St. Mary's?
It's on St. Mary's, just past St. Vitale Mall. Yeah. And Ray has been around for a long time.
Yeah.
You could go to Winnipeg Record and Tape, which is on Wellington in the West End. Cavan, he's a good dude. Where else could you could go to Entertainment Exchange at the Grand Park Mall? So,
yeah,
you know.
Is-
You
That's
know,
a good spot.
What else am I? There's a whole bunch.
Yeah, no doubt.
Bunch of different places. But yeah, support physical media. Go buy yourself something tangible. Hold the product in your hand. Listen to the music. Flip through the liner notes. You know, physical media, it's a lot like collecting hockey cards, right?
Yeah.
You can turn it around. You can look at the stats. You can Read all about it.
Yeah, we glean all kinds of information from hockey cards. And we open hockey cards, you know, every week on this show.
Not this week, though.
Not this week. We're not going to.
No.
Why? Because, well, we're recording via Zoom.
Yeah. And so the one thing I do want to say just before we get too far into it, one of the reasons we are recording via Zoom today is because it is Big E's birthday.
Not so little.
We're recording on May 17th. But part of the reason I can't do the show live tomorrow is we've got a little bit of a birthday soiree going on for the head of the Talkin' Hockey Department of Scouting. My number one
invite must have been lost in the mail.
He said specifically after your antics, you came over and you watched hockey this past week, and he said, you know what? I got enough of listening to you two fellas to last me a while. I'll catch you on the podcast this week. Yeah. Big E turning 16. Hopefully he gets his license soon so he can start driving me around rather than the vice versa.
He's holding down third place in the Talkin' Hockey playoff pool right now.
Yeah, I know this.
He slipped from second, so I mean, you know, don't let him get too high on his horse. He was in second.
He sits a high horse these days.
I'll tell you, I'm making a run for him here. I'm coming up. I was in 16th place not too long ago. I'm in sixth. We'll talk about the Talkin' Hockey playoff pool in a bit, though.
For sure. Yeah. But we got to talk some Penguins, some 1992 Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yeah.
It was a fine squad.
Obviously they won the cup. They swept the Chicago Blackhawks in four straight. Mm-hmm. I believe we talked about that Hawks team that was led by Dirk Graham.
Yeah.
He's the captain.
Yeah. Officer
Eddie Belfour.
Dirk.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me. But, I don't think we've talked about the Penguins.
Well, what's interesting... Just before you get going, so the Penguins, and I think you were about to say this, they won back-to-back cups, 90-91, 91-92. We've talked about both of the teams that they beat, the 90-91 North Stars and then the 91-92 Hawks.
We've also talked a lot about the Penguins just by chance of kind of being on the periphery of talking about them. I mean, they were a powerhouse team in the early 90s.
Yes.
And so, you know, we've kind of talked about them in different ways and also pulling cards from that era.
Yeah.
I mean, on my current Pack Attack roster that I'm building, last week I selected Tom Barrasso as my netminder. And I believe that's the 91-92 cards or whatever that we're pulling right now, isn't it? You know, these Penguins are all over the place. They got their stamp everywhere. One of our absolute all-time favorites, Paul Coffey, was not part of this Stanley Cup team. They traded him away, part of a mid-season shakeup. And, the Penguins were the season before this, when they beat Minnesota, they were a unit, right? They were just rolling. This season, I don't know what happened, but they were not as much of a wagon, I'll say.
No.
Their regular season record was an unremarkable 39 wins, 32 losses, 9 ties, coached by the legendary Scotty Bowman, captain, of course, by Captain Mario. You know, they scored a whole lot of goals, but they could not keep the puck out of their net that year. They finished first in the league with 343 goals. They were the second worst team defensively and allowed 308 goals.
Correct.
But, you know, a mid-season shakeup, kind of, you know, they moved. What'd they do? They traded. They traded Paul Coffey to L.A.
Yes.
They got. Who'd they get for him?
So it was Brian Benning, Jeff Chychrun.
Jeff Chychrun.
And the Kings' 92 first-round draft pick.
Uh-huh.
But what also happened the same day is then they turned and they flipped Brian Benning and Mark Recchi and that first-round draft pick, and they brought back Shel Samuelson, Rick Tocchet, and Ken Riggett, who became the backup goalie.
Yeah. Well, you bring in Tocchet and Shell, that's Samuelson. That's, you know, that's a certain type of player they're bringing back there.
Well, it's interesting.
Big boys.
You know what I
realized? Bad attitudes.
You know what I didn't realize is, so Shel Samuelson played for a number of teams, played for the New York Rangers, the Flyers, the Penguins, and the Tampa Lightning. His son is Marcus Samuelson, who plays for the Buffalo Sabres right now.
Yeah, and here's a fun fact about Marcus Samuelson. I'll just give off the top of my head.
Yeah,
he had the Sabres' best plus minus in the regular season and had a very good season. He scored
a bunch of goals. Not Marcus, Matthias.
Matthias, okay.
Matthias Samuelson.
But in the playoffs so far, and in particular in that Habs series, now this is going back a game or two ago, he was a dash, I don't know what.
He wasn't very good.
No.
No.
Yeah. So basically, the Penguins, you know, this 91-92 team, distractions. They were...
A few of them.
Yeah. Head coach Bob Johnson passed away.
Yes. Well,
like in November of that season. Now, he was, by this time, the previous head coach, I think.
Yeah. So coming into the season, so his last year as the head coach was the previous, the 90-91, goes out on a high, wins the Stanley Cup. Yeah. He had been diagnosed with brain cancer. And so he is kind of a legendary hockey guy. Badger Bob was well known and was just kind of an iconic coach. He steps down. Penguins bring in Scotty Bowman, himself a legendary coach.
Yeah.
And in November of 1991, Bob Johnson tragically loses his battle with cancer. Penguins honor him for the rest of the year. They put a patch on the sleeve. It says Badger, which is kind of iconic. And, it's kind of weird because they had such a great collection of guys. But like you said, they were kind of up and down. And,
Yeah, and there was a couple other things. I'm just reading a Pittsburgh Hockey Now article here looking back on this season. And so Jaromir Jagr, he was a sophomore player because he was a rookie the year they won the cup the first time. This is his second year in the league.
Mm-hmm.
He was suspended for 10 games that season for
really?
Bumping into referee Ron Hoggarth.
Huh. I don't remember that.
No, me neither. But interestingly, this is also the season that Mario Lemieux made his infamous Garage League comment.
Oh!
And that really caught the ire of the NHL's referees. So you got a couple of bad boys on the Penguins. The referees, you know, they're taking note, taking numbers, 68, 66. I mean, everybody knows. You don't got to take their numbers. You know who they are.
I was going to say, you know who those guys are.
Yeah, but... kind of interesting that was that season. So the Garage League comment, of course, was Mario talking about the quality of the refereeing during a particular game that he thought was a little on the horrendous side. And he said, you know, these referees are Garage League. Garage League, of course, is what they call rec hockey beer league in Montreal.
Yes.
And his, I don't know, French accent, the quality of the microphones used in 1991, whatever the combination was, it was misinterpreted and heard as Garbage League.
Mm-hmm.
And the NHL didn't take too kindly to that. They didn't like it. Of course, it's Mario. They're not going to suspend him for that. But I think he was probably fined or, you know, it wasn't appreciated, I guess.
No.
And then, of course, the rec league that we play in, that's been going for 4 years now, 5 years, is called the Garage League of Hockey, which is directly taken from Mario's quote. So,
yes.
Yeah, kind of interesting. But, yeah, the shakeup, it was, you know, Paul Coffey, the highest scoring defenseman in NHL history at this point. He's flipped over to L.A. And, you know, he'd be in L.A. for a couple seasons. And, again, I think the year that L.A. went to the final, I think Coffey was traded to Detroit at that point.
Yeah.
So he kind of – Coffey won a Stanley Cup there, you know, with Edmonton and with Pittsburgh this previous year. But then he just missed a whole bunch in a row because he kept getting traded. So,
yeah. Well, I think at that point, you know, the league was shifting.
Mm-hmm.
The offensive defenseman was definitely still a thing. But you also had to kind of play a little bit more defense. Like the free – we were moving out of the – we had moved out of the freewheeling kind of 80s – you know, up tempo, and we were moving more towards a bit of a defensive game. And Paul Coffey, yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. I was just gonna say Pittsburgh needed aggressiveness. They needed a little more muscle. You know?
Yeah.
And then they got that with Tockett and Samuelson. So,
yeah.
And I mean, L.A. Coffey, he was perfectly content to land in L.A. where Gretzky and, you know, Yuri Curry and Charlie Huddy and some of his other, Marty McSorley, some of his old Oiler buddies were at, right? So,
yeah.
And well, I mean, he lit it up out there too, right? So,
yeah. One of the other things that I would say is that I'm guessing that Paul Coffey, and I would never call him expendable.
Yeah.
We love Paul Coffey. But 91-92 is also Larry Murphy's first year with the Penguins.
Mm.
And so he was
kind of
he was an offensive defenseman. He put up a point per game. Ironically, 77 games played, 77 points. Paul Coffey numbers, if you get my drift.
Yeah,
he was also a plus minus 33. And Coffey, when he was traded, he was only a plus four.
Right. Defensively, you're getting a little more with Murphy.
Yeah.
And same kind of output, really, I suppose. And so, and you know, Coffey, we love him. He's not known for his physical play.
No. No, not at all.
Yeah. But you know who was known for his physical play? One of the premier power forwards in the league at that time, Mario's right-hand man, or should I say left-hand man, Kevin Stevens.
Yeah.
Stevens had a great season. He scored 54 goals skating alongside Mario. He had 123 points to finish second in team scoring. Mario, of course, led the way with 131 points. Mario only played 64 games. And that's just kind of how he rolled, you know. But, like...
But yeah.
Stevens also had a great year.
Had a great year. I mean,
look
probably.
At his pimps.
Yeah, I know, right? Probably his best year in the NHL, points wise, definitely. But also, like the physical game. Still, I believe he led the Penguins in penalty minutes, 254 minutes. And then in the playoffs, you know, puts up 28 points in 21 games.
Yeah.
And
28 pimps.
Accumulates another 28 pims as well. And then, you know, he kind of this was kind of the apex for his career, right? Started to go down the other side of the mountain. But yeah, he was just an absolute beast.
Yeah, he was. I mean, this Penguins team also had Ron Francis, you know what I mean? And he didn't have the biggest of regular seasons, but showed up in the playoffs for sure. You know, and then, of course, Yaromir Yager, who we barely mentioned, 19 years old at this point. He had 32 goals, 69 points in the regular season. but had a great playoffs, 24 points in 21 games, right? So this was a clutch team. You know, they had Brian Trottier on this team, right? There was a lot of character.
And a lot of characters. Yeah. You know, you look at some of the guys a little bit further down the list. Troy Loney and a guy I always enjoyed, Phil Bork, who wore number 29. He had a greasy mullet coming out the back.
The greasiest.
And he wore the black Jofa.
Yeah. And he became quite a broadcaster, actually, in his retired, not his retired days, because he was working as a broadcaster, but doing Penguins radio, I want to say. And I'd heard him, you know, he'd make appearances here and there, and I quite liked hearing him.
And then also when they he kind of became a local favorite the previous season during the victory celebration when they won the cup in 1991, he drunkenly exclaimed to the crowd, "What do you say we take this cup out on the river and party all summer?" Which, you know,
that was what Phil said.
Yeah, what a beauty. The other thing, you talk about disruptions.
What's the river in Pittsburgh?
Well, yeah, because Pittsburgh is the three rivers city, right? So famously, the Pittsburgh Pirates play in Three Rivers Stadium, which is where the I'm trying to remember what they are. I know the Allegheny is one.
Yeah, the Allegheny or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's Susquehanna? Is that something?
Well, that's
Scottish. I know, folks. We're getting into geography now.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Weirdly enough, the Penguins also got sold in 91.
Yeah.
They were sold to the former owners of the Minnesota North Stars, Howard Baldwin and Morris Belzberg.
That can't be good for business.
But they got beat. So North Stars get beat, and then Baldwin and Belzberg get rid of their stakes in the North Stars, and they buy the Pittsburgh Penguins the following fall. You know that great
can't beat them, join them,
right? So that great Darian Hatcher card that I pulled in the pack attack, where he's speaking to the
draft,
he's talking to the two dudes in suits.
Yeah,
that's Howard Baldwin and Morris Belzberg.
Nice.
Yeah,
full circle.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the Penguins kind of fell in. I don't know if it was immediately, like the. Later in the 90s, a few years later in the 90s, the Penguins fell on hard economic times, I think. Like there was talk of them moving a bunch of times. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then eventually Mario ended up buying the team or whatever, which is a whole nother story. It's interesting. So the rivers in Pittsburgh, you got the Ohio River.
Yeah.
You got the Monongahela River.
Yeah.
And then you got the Allegheny River.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to my eye, it really just looks like two rivers. But at the forks, the Pittsburgh forks, they split them up into three. So,
do you think they call the market area at those rivers the forks?
I have no idea what they call it. Hmm. It looks like they call it Point State Park.
No.
So, whatever.
Sure.
Yeah.
If you say so.
I do.
Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, these Pittsburgh Penguins, you know, they switched it up at the trade deadline. They said, this isn't working for us. Because they had 5 wins in 20 games at that point or something. They had been skidding. When the deadline came around, they had just 1 win in 7 games, putting them in danger of missing the playoffs. But, they got in there and they turned it around and then they went on a run. And their first round series against Washington was a tough one. They beat them 4-3, took 7 games. Mm-hmm. Then they played the Rangers in round two, beat them in six, and then they started sweeping. They got out the brooms. They swept the Bruins. They swept the Blackhawks. And they took their second Stanley Cup in franchise history back-to-back. The Penguins, of course, now have five Stanley Cups in their franchise history. So Mario's got two. Sid's got three. They've been to the final six times and won five of them. So it's a pretty good, you know, record. The only time they didn't win was when Sid was just a young pup and they lost against Detroit in 2008 or so.
Yeah.
Yeah, these Penguins. I mean, Scotty Bowman, when did he retire? Like, it must have been not long after this, right? Like, by the time... No, I guess he went and coached in Detroit after Pittsburgh here. Yeah, okay. So he coached in Pittsburgh for just the like a couple years, 91-92. Then the following season he coached them. And they were a good team that year. They for sure, you know, had a much better record. And then he went to Detroit for, you know, 8 years or something. Won a few more Stanley Cups.
I think
he didn't have enough.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, Scotty Bowman, when it was all said and done, didn't he have, like, more rings than he had fingers?
Counting nine as a coach.
Right. But then he also won with the back-to-back Chicago teams as he was, like, a advisor or something,
yeah.
Wasn't he?
Yeah. So he's got nine cups as a head coach. I don't know how to see his GM, whatever. Anyway, yeah. Yeah, you're right, though. He was some sort of GM advisor type thing in Chicago.
Yeah.
So.
Good on you, Scotty.
Unless he's got more than 10 fingers, I guess.
Which is possible. You never know.
Never know.
He was the senior advisor of hockey operations. Okay, so. He won.
It was basically Rutherford's job that he just stepped down from in Vancouver.
Yeah. So he won in 2010, 2013, and 2015 with the Blackhawks. 14 rings when he retired.
Sakes alive.
That's like, I mean, 11 fingers, Tom, I can understand, but 14.
You're putting rings on your toes,
Scotty,
at this point.
Scotty'd have like, yeah, seven fingers a hand with some webbing. It would be weird. I will say that of the modern era, and when I mean the modern era, I mean our era of watching hockey.
Yeah.
There was... 13 Hall of Famers involved in this final. So you had Tom Barrasso, Ronnie Francis, Mario Lemieux, of course.
Yeah.
One of our favorites, Joey Mullen and his neck guard. Larry Murphy, Brian Trotche. And then on the Blackhawks side, you had Ed Belfour, Chris Chelios, Michel Goulet, Dominic Hasek, Jeremy Roenick, Scotty Bowman, and then Andy Van Hellemond.
That's insane. And you can add a 14th soon, Jaromir Jagr.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because Jaromir Jagr is still playing up until this season.
Yeah. Well, and we got to take a break and we got to play a song, but we'll talk about Jaromir Jagr in 1 minute here because... Yeah. He's got ties